Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Malaysia's COVID-19 mortality rate increased to 0.86% in the past week, meaning that almost one in every 100 COVID cases in the past week had succumbed to the disease. Now, in the first 18 days of May alone, we had 500 reported deaths, the same number that we experienced for the whole of 2020. Now, are we headed for a quote-unquote vertical surge? And what consequences will this have for society and our health system? Dr. Mafizrul Mahmud is an anaesthetist and critical care consultant at Gleneagles Medini Johor. He joins us on the line now. Dr. Mafiz, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Now, the Director Health General, Dr. Nur Hisham Abdullah, has warned of this vertical surge, in his words, of the current COVID-19 epidemiological curve. Now, I'm just wondering what you understand the situations to be in hospitals at the moment.
All right. Thank you very much, Melissa. I think, it's, of course, grave of concern. And if those who are watching closely the situation in the social media and what the Director General himself, Dato' Hisham, has been saying and portraying of how the healthcare in terms of the last line of defense. Yeah, we're talking about ICU beds. We're talking about the mortality, the death rates, and how the number of cases are increasing and it becomes more exponential now. As we are aware regarding what we call the R0 number. Yeah, the number of about infectivity currently is one of its highest, is 1.2. And it's looking at, we are not at our peak yet, where we think death of about maybe 60 per day, which are being announced every day to be the last of it. Maybe not. We may be increasing as it is. And of course, the measures that we are doing now is to halt this rise and hope, as how the famous words that have been going on since last year, flattening the curve. And we are trying to flatten a very steep curve, which is going upwards at the moment. So yes, it is of a grave concern. My colleagues who are working all day, all night, whether from the public health side or the last line of defense, the emergency department, the ICU, are struggling. They are struggling. They are not like having their time of their life. And most of us are not prepared already. But we have to, and we have done so far. But the fatigue is there. And everybody's tired, and we are still doing our best, my colleagues. And I applaud that. And
Dr. Mafiz, I want to ask you, we look at the problem, and since it's a global one, the death rate, at least as it was expressed last year, were quite relatively good compared to many countries. And we think of the mortality rates in countries in Western Europe, for instance, we're far behind some of the numbers there. But, in each of these contexts, there are reasons why people die and why certain types of people are dying, the demographics of it. What do you understand to be the main reasons people are dying? Is it the general lack of good health, or is it that we have an aging population that's much more vulnerable? What's your perspective on this?
All right. It is definitely a new type of disease that we are facing. Most of us do not know, especially last year, how it will turn out. And we have, in fact, what we based it on what earlier was what the previous SARS, because this is SARS-CoV-2, because it's about the same, the virus, but how it acts or how it kills people, like what topic talking about today, is totally somehow a bit different of what we are used to or what we know. Yes, you are right. The last year, the main major population and how we could put it at risk are those who are elderly, and as well with lots of comorbids, which means that they have other diseases. Even in our statistics of our admission in Sungai Buloh, which was published, where we have this big population, and the risks are or the elderly ones. And these are the ones who are vulnerable. Hence, I guess the idea of trying to protect them in terms of our strategy for vaccination, etc. But as you can see, as 2021 looms and came, we were talking about the variant of interest that became variant of concern. the Brazil, the South African, the Indian. And I guess the one example that we take here is like India. What happened to India? India, relatively with the big number of population last year, was great. I mean, people would still argue that they are underreporting, etc. But what happened in the last month and how their surge became like almost 500,000 per day infected, and the death was alarmingly, nobody could really explain, saying it's the Indian crisis. And it's the currently, you would see people flocking the emergency department, the ICU are the younger ones. That means the age between 40 to 60. Before the 60, 80s, we get everybody to be infected, but those with the bad COVIDs are the elderly ones or who gets the complication. The younger ones right. tend to be even, 80% are said to be okay, yeah.
Right. Dr. Mafizarel, I'm curious to ask you about the number of people who have been brought in dead, or the BID cases. Has been increasing, particularly in the Klang Valley. I'm wondering why people are dying at home. What are the reasons behind, what do we understand about these cases of people dying at home, not making it to hospital?
Okay. I think the situation, what is different from this year and last year, would be currently what we're having is this community spread where we do not really know where the infection starts. Previously, we would presume in terms of the infection that starts of the symptom and how it worsens was within 5 to 7 days. Now it's maybe you are okay from day 0 to day 10. Even when you're tested, it can still be negative, but you become severe at day 12. In COVID, there are really 5 stages that we put them to be in their clinical condition. Stage 1, basically, they are asymptomatic, but they are positive. To stage 5, which is the worst, multi-organ failure, needing mechanical ventilation for oxygenation. So the deterioration you would expect from 1 to go to 5 as it progresses, because you can predict if you're in a cluster, you're able to contact trace, you would know exactly how many days you are in. Now you do not know. The one thing about COVID is you have what we call the happy hypoxics. What it means is, patient in any other disease that affects the lung, one of the first indication or symptom that you have is your shortness of breath, where you do not have enough oxygen, so the body reacts to tell yourself, okay, I don't have oxygen. But in COVID, a patient can be looks absolutely well, breathing well, no issues. But when you put the oxygen saturation on, they are already on stage 4, where they really need the oxygen, but they are not behaving as if they are. And this is where people may not be able to realize that. And by the time they feel the symptoms or their sign where they have the shortness of breath, and that is the time of stage 4. And that is when the deterioration can be really steep downwards and you arrive or you are dead before you arrive in the hospital. So these are the particular point now in the community spread. And hence, the strategy now, even though people, there are arguments against lockdown, etc. But yeah, self-lockdown is most important. It's our responsibility. What I think people do not really realize is we are the ones who are bringing the virus around. The virus doesn't move. It's a human-to-human transmission. That means it's our droplets. That's why we wear masks. We protect ourselves, the healthcare worker, the PPE. Yeah, but the worst is when you are asymptomatic, you don't have symptoms, you are very infective and you go and meet all around. And that's where it spreads and spreads, and you do not know at what day you actually contracted it. And maybe when you get the symptom, the shortness of breath or the really bad signs of that, it's already too late. And that's one of the reasons why people are appearing late in emergency department. And basically it's like almost the end stage. Yep.
Right. And Dr. Murphy, is it still true, though, that this younger cohort of people who are getting severe COVID, the 40 to 60-year-olds, are still largely people with serious comorbidities, and that somehow it reflects the situation of Malaysia's population's health? We have like the highest rates of diabetes in the region, for instance. Is that what is really underscoring this picture, that we've come into this pandemic with poor health?
Yep. Okay. That would actually explain in terms of for example, we already have a number, the total number of 1,300 ICU beds. Previously, it's like about 800, and these 800 beds are filled with all type of patients every time. Hence, once this patient age 40 to 60 who are with the comorbids, yeah, they are at higher risk. And yes, it shows as well where we would expect those who have these comorbids, even at this age, to be able not to fend themselves against the COVID-19 infection. One of the things that happens is what COVID-19 does is purely in terms of what we call this the oxygenation level of the person. And with all these diseases on board, it fastens, it hastens the complications that can come in. Yeah, and it is a risk factor. Example, in India, currently because of their COVID-19 surge and with all the treatment, etc., we are seeing this what we call the black fungus syndrome, which is going on. And it is related to patients within the Indian population who are diabetic, as well as other reasons as well. So it's an interesting perspective on what COVID-19 has brought in and exposed the other health issues that probably is held in the population.
Right. Dr. Mahfiz, today the health minister, Dr. Adam Baba, he said that if the COVID-19 crisis worsens in Malaysia, that we could come to a situation where severe COVID-19 cases may be transferred from critical care to end-of-life care. Could you explain to us what that means? What would that look like?
Okay. If we are to arrive at that stage, it means that it is totally overwhelmed, and what we concentrate is actually on this particular one disease. At this current moment, we already have 726 today in ICU out of the 850 pure COVID bed that we provide. Total is about 1,300. So if we arrive at the stage where we talk about end of life, it means that we are triaging. And this is where I think even the Director General himself has been saying we do not want to be able to arrive at a situation where we have to choose those who live or those who we could not salvage. And the reason being is the resources. We do not have the resources, or we have run out of the resources. The best example, we talk about oxygen.
I'm interested that I understand the resource constraints, right? And so the triage, the filtering out of people depending on whether they're going to survive or not survive. But what about the disease itself? Does this disease manifest itself in a way that there is a point of no return for a particular individual, that it's so severe that survival is not only not likely, but the person might survive with a lot of complications for a very long time?
Yep, you are right. Because when we talk about the COVID, what is happening to somebody is not really the direct effect of the virus from the start. But what happens is the virus induces the hyperimmune response of the body to protect, but it becomes over, hence all the complication that can come in and cause the multi-organ failure. But you are right. Example, those who are badly affected with COVID pneumonia, who would end up with the treatment, etc., at the end of the day, their lung may not function as well. Those who come in with 80% of the lung functioning will end up, even at discharge, maybe just 10%. So these are the things that we see in the, not just here, globally as well. And whether what's whether it is the decision of the clinician as well with the family and everybody in terms of whether that should be let to be happen. In Malaysia, I believe we have not really, of course, the practice in terms of understanding end of life, understanding no active resuscitation, etc., is there. But the whole understanding, even by the society, in telling that whatever we do intervene may not be beneficial to anybody, as well as what we always would like to talk about die with dignity. Because we try, of course, resources, but at the end of the day, we are not really helping the person, then we're not giving justice to the patient. So these are some of the issues when we talk about end of life, when we talk about who should and who should not. It is a tough decision. We do not want to be at that stage because it's not easy. It's not that we have not done it, as in it's not a practice, because every day in ICU, even without before we came to COVID, the situation is exactly the same. It's the same for any other diseases when we have to see who should get and who should not.
Dr. Mafizral, thank you so much for joining us on the show, painting a sobering picture, but one that's very necessary. Thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but more on this topic in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned.